on This Week in Enterprise Tech. NSFW gets trolled, your data gets rolled, and we tell you how to keep things from blowing up. Quiet on the set.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Enterprise Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 31, recorded March 4th, 2013. Trolls and Other Disasters. This episode of TWiT is brought to you by Hover.com. Hover is the reliable domain name registration and management service that's simple, honest, and easy to use. For exceptional customer support and 10% off your new domain, go to hover.com/enterprise and enter offer code ENTERPRISE. And by GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate with colleagues and clients from anywhere. You can share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use promo code ENTERPRISE. And by Lantronics, maker of the XPrint server. Print from your iPad, iPhone, or iOS device to virtually any printer. For more information, visit XPrintServer.com/TWiT and enter the coupon code TWiT to receive free shipping on your order. Welcome to TWiT, This Week in Enterprise Tech. It's the show dedicated to the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and the geek who just wants to know what's going on in the world. I'm your host, Father Robert Ballasaire, the Digital Jesuit, your guide to all things in the enterprise, and I've got an absolutely stellar panel for you today, starting with, of course, the geek in paradise, Mr. Brian Chi. Brian, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. In fact, I just got shanghaied into helping to plan a mini maker fair in Honolulu.
Mini maker fair in Honolulu. There's nothing in that sentence that doesn't make me absolutely excited. Are you going to get us more details about that, or do we just have to wait?
You're just going to have to wait a little bit, but I am going to try and make it to the Bay Area Fair this year.
Nice, nice. Maybe we'll have a Maker TWiT. I'm sure we can't have more guests than we have on today. Also joining us is Mr. Curtis Franklin from Enterprise Efficiency. Curtis, how are things going on in Florida?
Florida is wonderful, if a little bit cool today, but hey, it's a great day to be inside and talking to everyone on TWiT.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, speaking of everyone on TWiT, we've got some special guests. Now, if you've been watching the TWiT network, you probably know them. You love them. You've seen them, and they're hilarious, but you may not know that they have also got an incredible acumen for the business world. I'm standing next to Mr. Brian Brushwood and Justin Robert Young. Gentlemen, introduce yourself.
Dude, I thought you were saying we had acumen, and I was like, well, clearly that's not us.
While I was a teenager, I was on acumen to clear up my acne, and it worked really well.
It's good. I like you that. Can't have babies now.
No.
That's right out.
He's doing the world a favor. But no. Let's talk about the reason why you're on the show, and that is, well, over the weekend, you got into a little kerfuffle, a little roll in the hay.
Yeah, so you got
roll in the hay.
whimsical. Wow. And all these words coming from the Catholic priest. You can't call it a kerfuffle because it's a one-sided affair. We came in a day early. I was in the Bay Area to attend a wedding, and Just Robert Young and I were recording Night Attack 2, the next comedy album. It's the Chinese democracy of our comedy albums.
Yes.
And we go up. Justin's like, hey, man, you should check out the roof. It's really awesome. We go up there, and then my Twitter is just exploding. First with somebody saying, hey, is what they're saying about you true? From a random person. I was like, what are they saying?
Well, and then I have spiky hair? And he answered blindly, absolutely. Everything you've read about me is true.
And then somebody says, dude, 4chan attack on you. And I was like, what? And I click on the latest Scam School episode, and there is just a flood, a nonstop flood of comments coming in accusing me of being a pedophile,
saying that I got
arrested, that, you know, and then you could see some of the fans, the confused response, and it was
it was as if, you know, there was a popular celebrity and news broke, and now all of a sudden that's the only thing, like the commentary on the news story is the only thing that's on these videos.
Yeah, well, and so the first question is like, why, you know, and so we. Luckily, some of the fans of what you know we call them chat realm fans of the NSFW show did a little poking around, and sure enough, they forward over to me the board where there's a subboard of 4chan where I believe the first two rules are you don't mention the subboard. So maybe we shouldn't say who the subboard is.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we shouldn't mention the board that goes by one letter.
Yes, whatever that lever better is.
Yes,
yeah. we shouldn't mention it. But anyway,
Beck, no.
We got totally bucked by this whole thing.
You went there.
So they apparently they have a practice of just for the lulls, right? Just for laughs. They'll pick people will submit suggestions for somebody that they can essentially pedo bomb, like just random person. They roll the dice, and if that person wins, the lucky thing.
And it's a raid, you know. It is a forum raid. It's not just unique to 4chan or to that board specifically. You know, it is something where if people want to kill time on a Saturday, it's a funny thing for them to do. It also happens to be very serious character assassination.
As Mido says, collateral damage, bro.
Yeah,
sorry.
If it goes, you know, a certain way, and we tried to handle it as best we could, but I think, you know, the biggest lesson for anybody on an enterprise side who's dealing with this is just understanding what it is, where it's coming from, and, you know, if you react to it in the way that it is appropriate to you and your audience, just don't mistake it to be anything else,
right?
You know,
well, and of course, what's beautiful about this accusation, I say shuddering as I say it, is that virtually there's no response that doesn't sound like a denial that gives plausibility. Like, what are you going to say? Like, but I love kids. Why would you call me that?
A lot of people who watch me are kids. I have three daughters.
Yes.
There's nothing that doesn't make it sound worse.
Because there's people in the chat room right now who are wondering, well, where is this going and what is this? The first thing we have to mention is that this wasn't 4chan being malicious. This is just what 4chan does, right?
Well, this subgroup.
It is being malicious. Yeah. That's why it's funny.
But the second thing has to be, this is the reason why I asked you to come on Twyte, is you have a very specific example of something that happens all the time in the enterprise, and that is your brand gets besmirched. In your case, you had people who, not maliciously, just, again, for the lulls, decided that it would be fun, it would be hilarious to throw a lot of stuff onto one of your YouTube videos and ruin your reputation.
Yeah. Well, and they got as far as, you know, they edited the Wikipedia page, and it was like an infection, like a wildfire that you could watch spreading from video to video to video. We were lucky in that we got a heads up early on. So we recorded a video that the last thing, I mean, you know, I'm terrified of these guys. You know, we've watched them utterly destroy people. I'm not smart enough to know, but this is the culture, if not the exact group that Anonymous came out of, you know? So, obviously there's a lot to be terrified of, but the puzzle was, how do we tell my fans what's going on without looking like we're challenging them back and acknowledging it? So we, recorded a video within minutes that sort of explained what it was. It basically said, thank you.
Took it as an honor.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
That like you had been selected, by the board, and the reason that they found it funny to character assassinate you was because you were a big enough person that it would be interesting.
Right.
You know,
right.
Because if they do it to a random person, you know, then it's like, there's no consequence.
Right.
You know, they can just, shut down their account and that would be it.
But this is a learning moment because one does not pick a fight with 4chan.
No.
You don't. There's no reason to do it. You're absolutely not going to win. But you did a few things that were unique. The first thing is you got the Twit chat room, chat realm involved. And they didn't get into a shouting match. They basically just sort of matched 4chan in the absurdity.
Well, that was not us.
Yeah, we didn't do anything. And that's what's amazing about, if you have a hardcore dedicated group of fans and if they're tech savvy.
Which I highly recommend getting.
Yeah. If you're in enterprise tech, do yourself a favor. Just make an award-winning comedy show with tens of thousands of fans who are passionate and will just take care of you whether you try to or not. We recommend, if you can do that, if you have the means, I highly recommend it.
And also, I mean, the other thing, and this is probably something that was really unknown to the people who raided the forum with the pedo bomb, but we on NSFW have done our own kinds of raids in the past.
We did a compliment bomb.
Yeah, we did the opposite. So we've done it a couple times. We found random newspaper articles and hopefully at very small town newspapers, and then just like bombed their comment section about how awesome of a writer they are and how much their writing has changed our lives.
Yeah.
And it's like a fun thing for us to just randomly like have a pile of sunshine.
We understand the appeal to, you know.
And how it works.
Yes.
Like why it's funny, how it works, how to do it, how it is, how we view those things as effective and how and why we view them as not effective or not funny.
Right.
And that's kind of what we sought to do.
But I'll tell you what, man, there is a desperate, terrifying, you know, couple of hours when it's like, you know, we put it out there. We're like, well, hopefully he'll find it funny. Hopefully my fans will understand, you know, that this is the result of a prank, you know, for the lulz and so on. And then pretty soon there was some, it started to feel relief when we started to get comments that were still kind of trolly, but sort of were like, well played, Brushwood. You rolled with it or whatever. So, you know, hopefully we'll do nothing.
My favorite was like, hey, you got a bunch of views. We tried to have some fun. I think it's a win-win all around.
Well, okay, so let me break it down for the people who don't run an award-winning comedy show.
Sure.
A multiple award-winning, by the way.
Sure.
I have to mention. Well, Chat Room.
Yeah, Chat Room Awards.
They made their own awards, Awards.
But let's say you're running a small business or even a large enterprise. The very first reaction I've seen most of the time has been to either take down the video that is being attacked or take down the page that's being attacked, to lock comments or to do something to ignore what's going on. That's not really possible anymore, right? I mean, you can't ignore a 4chan bomb.
It might be. I mean, you know, it really depends on what you have to do. Like, what is the relationship between you and your audience? You know, we have a very active, very engaged relationship with Chat Realm. So they were doing stuff before we even thought to tell them. You know, a lot of times enterprise stuff, you don't necessarily have that one-to-one communication with the people that would want to take time out of their day on a Saturday and help defend your honor. I think the goal is just try to take the wind out of it in any way that you can. If that is taking down the video, then that's taking down the video. But like I can't say that there's any blanket.
I can say blanketly that there is no universal smart response. These guys are smarter than you. There's more of them. And
they're staying up later.
Exactly.
They will be up when you go to sleep.
Well, see, that's the quicksand. If you had gotten into a one-on-one battle to reply to these people or to take down their comments, you would have been there forever, and you would have provoked them because that's what they were looking for, right?
That was our thinking. But again, you know, that's...
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. The one thing I can say is don't react like somebody is out to get you, because that is the exact reaction.
Well,
that,
and they're
makes
so
this
savvy. They're so savvy. Like you'll notice, them, like they'll come up with comments that appear to be other people commenting it, where it's like, instead of saying this guy's a pederast or whatever, mm-hmm. they'll say, guys, seriously, stop talking about it. The case is still pending.
Right.
You need to, you know, it's like, let's hear him out. You know, where it's like
they were really, really good at it, because they could have just had, okay, let's have 1,000 people go on and say he's a pederast. And people would have realized
it would have been so much noise.
But because you had all that gray area, it kind of made people think, well, maybe there's something to this. Maybe I need to look it up.
Yeah, no, it's there's a number of articles. I think Wired has a couple of articles on them if you guys can find it. I think it's the kind of thing that I would at least educate yourself to the possibilities of what could happen, and then think of your own personal strategy. Inject yourself in the narrative and say, what would I do if all of a sudden I was the victim of a massive trolling attack? Right. To handle it from a PR perspective.
I do want to bring in our two other expert guests here. Brian, I hope you're still there. This is sort of the nightmare scenario of an enterprise, right? You've spent all this money, millions and millions of dollars, to build up your brand. Maybe you're doing an advertising campaign, and then it gets targeted. It gets attacked. Again, not maliciously, just for people who are looking for something fun to do. What would the typical enterprise response be to something like this?
Ah!
Curtis, would you like to add to that?
Well, it's interesting, because we've seen a couple of things. One is, I think that our guests have an absolutely brilliant and proper approach, and that is to positively manage your reputation rather than simply trying to ignore it. The problem, as they point out, is that they have a unique set of skills that let them do this. Most enterprises don't. Mm-hmm. most enterprises are going to have to fall back on the normal PR channels, things like press releases, letting the press know that this is going on. But I will say that this is one case where building your customers into a community is...
Oh, totally saved the day.
And it's the enterprise equivalent of building up this fan base. Because if you have people who not only buy your products and services, but actively like you, who build an enjoyment of your company and its products into who they are, then they are much more likely to organically defend you than are people who are simply used to giving you money. That's the hard part, although it's something that a lot of enterprises are working on today. It's tough, and frankly, I think that it's an opening for people like our guest to make giant piles of money consulting to enterprise on how to do this precise thing.
Yes.
I like this giant
pile. Yes. The big tide of cash is finally washed on the NSFW, boys.
If there's a lesson for enterprise folks, I think also it speaks to the idea that having a social media strategy, having a large or encouraging people to follow you directly was a very important back channel, because everybody who was conducting the raid, they were leaving the comments in the YouTube. Most of them didn't even know what my Twitter was or where to find it. But by me being able to retweet like, oh, apparently this is happening. Here's the board where they're putting it together. They were able to self-mobilize. You know, it's like, you know, there's literally nothing I personally could have done to stop this. And outside of, you know, the video that we recorded. But I think if anything else, as a preventative measure, as an insurance strategy, it would make sense to convert your goodwill from fans into a way to have a personal connection with them.
I mean, I would say this, though. You mentioned that a enterprise company is going to have to rely on more traditional PR strategies. And I think that that's absolutely the case. But you need to understand that if you put out a press release, that is going to make it worse.
That is what, like, they would, yeah, that's they would claim that as a victory.
Well, that's what they feed on. Yeah. I mean, they want that kind of response. They want you to get indignant. They want you to get upset. They want you to say, no, we're going to win this. We're going to take you guys down. And you're saying that's absolutely the wrong response to take.
Right.
Yeah.
Correct.
I mean, it's hard. It's super complicated. And again, there's no right answer that you can say in general, but just you got to think of it like a fire that needs oxygen to survive. If there is attention, and if there are more eyeballs that now have a changed dynamic based on what these people have done, they're going to keep doing it. That's oxygen for this fire.
Yeah.
What you need to do is to try to dispel early, you know, or just take away the place that this thing is happening.
You know, and it could be as simple, like, for me, the easiest way to get my message out was to make a video right away that sort of, you know, rolled with it. Yeah. And said, hey, thanks, we could really use the views. Not a big
make
fan
a
of
joke about it. Yeah. And then to play off, like, right, the idea of, like, you know, hey, by the way, did you solve the puzzle? We have, like, a little joke at the end. Right. So it's like,
and you can see all this if you go to the Scam School YouTube.com/scam school. Yes, exactly. YouTube.com/scam school has it still up there. But, you know, for an enterprise solution, it might be like the moment you know what's going on, you know, get word out to your fans, because that's the only way. You know, these guys don't care. Like, everyone who's doing the raid knows that you didn't do whatever terrible thing they're saying. Your customers need to know what is happening, or even, you know, maybe even what you suspect is happening, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think what we've learned is that you can't win against the trolls. But you can give them what they want, give them a couple of lulls, and then get them to move on. That's basically
what we're looking
for.
You can't get them
to
move on. You can sit there and quietly weep while you hope they move on.
Yeah. Well, and, like, you know, at the end of the day, the good news is you're not that interesting. If you make yourself not interesting, then there will be somebody more interesting or something more interesting that people who are going to raid you, like, are going to move on, you know? And it's like, it's even happened to us with the compliment bomb. You know? Like, there are times where it just doesn't work, you know, like either there's security on the comments or
they lock down the thread. They get too many entries, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so it'll cut off. And now it's not funny. You know, we can't see the result. You know, we don't know whether or not they're reading it, whether their dynamic has changed. And all of a sudden this article about women knitting in Georgia has 400 comments about how awesome it is. You know, like, we don't know, like, whether that worked. And so therefore, we just move on.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you very much for talking to us. You know, you bring a nice angle to it, and there's a lot of humor here. But again, this is actually a very serious situation in today's world of social media and the internet. I think you handled it well. And, you know, I want to give you a little time to talk about anything you've got going on right now, especially you, Brian, since I understand you're available on the talking circuit now. So if there was an enterprise out there that, say, wanted him to perform some magic and talk about defending your social reputation.
You would be talking about my fabulous keynotes where I involve magic and a message of branding and managing your personal social media strategy. Why, it would be a wonderful opportunity to speak to your enterprise customers about that.
And Justin?
Well, I have a new consulting business, so you can please contact me at Justin R. Young on Twitter. NSFW show, that's where me and Brian do a comedy show here on the Twit Network. If you like silly things, we like to do silly things. Let's meet and be friends.
And be silly.
And gentlemen, you are some of the stars of the Twit TV Network. You're always reliable for a laugh and for some nice thoughts every once in a while.
Hey! Yeah.
Yeah. You say the nicest
thing. Thank you very,
thing.
Very much, Robert.
Padre.
Well, you know what else is reliable?
What?
Well, if you're looking for something reliable in, say,
hosting. I don't know what you're about to say, but can I tell you, you're probably going to mention some domain company with super complicated checkouts, and there's a discount in there somewhere, but you got to find it in the checkbox and everything's big colors, and it's just like a verbal assault on your eyes. You just like, I use rage. Like, I just want a domain at a reasonable price.
We've got Hover.com. Now, you may not have heard about Hover.com, but you should have, because if you've been watching the Twit TV Network, they've been blowing up on every show we've got. And that's because they're a reliable and honest domain name and hosting company that, has decided to sign on with the Twit TV Network. Now, Hover makes it easy. Hover believes that everyone should be able to do what they need to do to take control of their online identity with their own domain name, and they make it easy to do so. Hover takes all the hassle out of owning and managing domain names with smart, easy-to-use, friction-free, and powerful domain name management tools. Now, Hover, first and foremost, is all about honesty. They don't believe in heavy-handed upselling or aggressive cross-selling. They don't believe in hiding functionality or requiring extra payments for the things that should be included with your domain name management. Things like who is privacy, subdomains, and URL forwarding are all included in your basic package. Hover also keeps it real. They offer services that enhance the domain name experience. They will only ever partner with companies that we believe offer our customers value and whose customers' first values mirror their own. In other words, they're only going to do business with companies that will treat you well. Hover email makes it easy and affordable to create memorable email addresses and eschew the impersonal free webmail email address. There's nothing more irritating than trying to respond to someone at their Gmail address when they really should be responding to, their own domain. Hover also offers you choices. They've got 23 top-level domains like .com, .net, .org, as well as TV, Pro, Mobi, and Biz. There are also many addresses that are not available these days, but Hover offers you .net addresses that you want. Now, Hover is here for the long haul. They are actually part of Tucows, a company that has been around since 1994 and that is one of the largest domain name registrars in the world. So here's what I'd like you to do. For Twyatt, for NSFW, visit Hover today at hover.com/enterprise. To register your domain name, use our offer code ENTERPRISE and get 10% off. That's right. That's hover.com/enterprise and the offer code ENTERPRISE. We thank Hover for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Now, we're not just about social media and the enterprise. We've got a super special treat for you in talking about storage options. But first, I want to introduce our two new guests. The first being, a regular of Twyatt, Mr. Alan Malventano. Alan, how are things going down in the South?
They're trying to warm up.
They're trying to warm up. Are a member of PC Perspective. You've been on Twyatt before, and your specialty is storage. What have you been working on recently?
The latest review we just put up today, actually, was of, believe it or not, someone who might be coming up as a guest here in a couple minutes. The IOSafe N2, which actually, do you have one sitting there?
I do, but hold that thought because I do want to bring in our second guest, and that is the CEO of IOSafe, quite possibly one of the coolest, smoothest CEOs I've ever met, Mr. Rob Moore. Rob, thank you very much for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure and a great show so far.
Oh, thank you. Now, I will notice that there's normally two B's in your name, but we'll get that fixed in a bit. I do want to go on to a little discussion about SANS versus NASs. This has been an occasional topic on Twite. We've never really gone in-depth on it. And I wanted to have a short discussion about the difference between a network-attached storage device and a SAN. Now, Chibert, you've dealt with both systems. What would you say is the biggest difference between a SAN user and a NAS user?
Probably latency. Most of the SANs are using some sort of synchronous technology like Fibre Channel, iSCSI, InfiniBand, and something like that. SAN tends to be something that can be mounted using, say, like a Mac or a PC without having to have any special hard disk drivers. One of the other things, too, is a storage area network typically can only be on one network, you know, one subnet. Whereas a NAS, because it's using something like Microsoft SMB or something like that, you can actually mount that over your wide area network.
Curtis, when we've talked about NASs in the past, let's say 10 years back, typically they were less expensive units. They were slightly or greatly lower in performance, and they usually used some sort of file-based network. They didn't have any sort of direct connect. There was no fiber channel that would give you a super high bandwidth path between the storage device and the computer. But in the last few years, we've really seen that change, right? What developments have we seen in the NAS world that have, sort of equaled the playing ground with the lower-end SANs?
Well, I think there are a couple of things that have made a huge difference. One of them is simply the improvement in the bandwidth of IP-based networking. You can now stick a 10-gig interface on a network-attached storage device and have awfully good throughput, although as Brian pointed out, latency is going to be an issue if you have super critical issues. The other is simply the need to have one set of disks available to multiple networks. The increased prevalence of virtualized servers, networks, and storage make it important to have something that is addressable by as many different devices and networks as possible. And for something like that, NAS is a great solution.
Right. Over to you, Alan. When you think about the people who would typically use a NAS solution over a SAN solution, yes, there's price, yes, there's performance, but what are sort of the deciding factors over those who decide that a NAS is enough for them?
It generally tends to just be the application and the size or just how many users you're going to have. So you'll find network-attached storage will just be more generally for smaller devices, smaller amounts of capacity, smaller numbers of users attached to it. Where you get into the SAN stuff is where it's, you know, huge or generally medium to large enterprise sort of applications.
Right. Rob, iOSafe has recently gotten into the NAS business. You've partnered with another very well-known company with a reputation for quality. What would you say was sort of the reason why iOSafe got into NASs, and what was the way that you designed your NAS to fit the needs of the people who you thought would need a product like the N2?
Sure. Well, the NAS market is an interesting market for us just because, as you know, we deal with disaster recovery and protecting data. And as soon as you start to have multiple drives rated together, it becomes harder both to move the data offsite as well as move the data through your WAN connection. So we see it as a big opportunity for iOSafe to really add some protection where protection is needed to vulnerable data.
Right, right. Now, Alan, I want to go straight into this because you just did a write-up of the iOSafe N2. And if Jason switches over to my product camera, you'll actually see we've got one in the studio. Now, this has some of the characteristics of an iOSafe product. And the first is this white substance that you see is actually, it's their patented ceramic, which embeds water so that in the event of a fire, it actually vaporizes, it protects the product, keeps the temperature down. It also creates a positive pressure as the steam vents, which keeps smoke out of the electronics. But it's basically a NAS box that has been armored. What did you find when you tore down the N2?
I was very impressed with the build quality, actually. We have a, I don't know if you call it a bad habit or a good habit or whatnot, but usually anything that I review, I tend to tear it all the way down, whatever it may be. So I figured, what the heck, might as well take this one all the way apart, too. So the first half of getting it apart is just to get the drives out, right? Because you can buy this unit as a just a bare-bones unit without hard drives. So basically, you just bring your own drives. And what's really interesting about it is that in addition to all the fireproof and the waterproof and everything else you have going for it, you can actually get to the drives, right? Because the original, the IOSafe that we reviewed last year, you know, the drive has to be protected and the water protective like a sleeve. And, you know, it's not really something you'd expect just someone to buy this thing and just your typical person just throwing a hard drive into or change a hard drive out. This one you can, right? And it's actually really, really easy. I think it was like 5 screws total to get both drives out. Actually, Padre, you've got the door off, so right. That was the first 2 screws, right? Right. And then there's 1 screw on the water protective lid right in the middle there. And then behind that, there's just 2 other screws, one for each drive. So really, really easy to get into. I think I even said in my review that I've seen hot swap like enclosures that were more difficult to get the drive out of than this.
Right. Now, one of the interesting design elements of this, and I want to throw this over to Rob, is when we've seen NASs in the past, it's typically been, well, you've got a great hot swap capability. I'm going to look specifically at, let's say, the ReadyNAS series from Netgear. You want to be able to pull the drives out, plug in a new one immediately, and get going. That's not really the case with the N2. I mean, because it's locked behind, let's call it what it is, a layer of armor, yes, you can get to it, but it takes some getting used to. What kind of data did you have that said customers are willing to trade off a little bit of ease of hot swappability for some added protection?
Yeah, well, people are constantly thinking about their data and they're worried about their data. They don't want to lose it no matter what. So I think the couple minutes to swap a hard drive in and out, it's a small price to pay if you're talking about your server's database or family pictures, and the frequency of hard drive failure is relatively low compared to, I think, how much work it takes to get a drive in and out. So it was something that we had to consider, and we added screws, not these levers. We didn't want anything to pop open if the thing fell off a shelf in a burning building. So, you know, all the screws are steel, all the outer casing is steel, and it's just the right way to do it.
That's a whole different way of looking at products. And that is, well, you know, you're not just designing it to say, well, how does it look? How does it feel? How much does it weigh? What's the performance like? You're actually saying, well, when a half a ton steel beam drops on top of this thing, what's going to happen? Or when it's cooked to, you know, 1,500 degrees for 20 minutes, what's going to break? It's a whole new way of looking at the design of enterprise-class hardware, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, the hard drive in itself is vulnerable. And I think that you see lots of very big businesses out there today either helping move hard drives off-site or streaming data online. And it's really to guard against this vulnerability. And IOSafe likes to ask the question, you know, well, what if the hard drive wasn't vulnerable? What if it never went away? And we work very hard to try and make that a reality. Obviously, everything has its pluses and minuses, but that's the way we think. We just think about the hard drive like it's a little vulnerable island of data that we need to fortify.
Yeah, I like that. What if the hard drive weren't vulnerable? Chibert, let me throw that over to you. If you could reasonably assume that your storage device is going to survive, what does that change about what you need to do for data integrity in the enterprise?
It actually saves you a ton of money. I've actually worked with a bunch of architectural firms, and we all know that intellectual property for an architect is everything. And so I've actually been going in, working with people, even on big enterprise-class servers, even on small servers, we've actually been putting in IOSafe drives off those just so we can have an on-site storage that could potentially survive a building burning down. And architects are not wild about taking something as valuable as the electronic version, electronic model of a building, and putting that out God knows where. It makes them nervous. So having the IoSafe has been a pretty big deal for a lot of architects here in Honolulu.
Yeah, Curtis, let me throw this over to you. And that is a thought I got from Alan Malventano when he said, while reviewing the N2, that the thought occurred to him that many of these NASs have some sort of USB device attached to it, a little extra piece of storage that things get offloaded to. But it's in a very strange position in that you could relatively, you could reasonably assume that the N2 was going to survive, but the backup drive wouldn't. That seems to throw what we know about proper backup etiquette on its head, does it not?
Well, it does, but the important thing here is to realize that more and more companies and individuals are going for some sort of cloud or offsite-based service for their second level backup. That's something that I know I do. I have my local devices here that I back up to. I also have, in my case, three separate cloud systems that I use to back critical files up to. And I think we're seeing that with more and more companies. With an enterprise, for example, you might very well see local files on something like an IoSafe, but they back up all the critical work files to the enterprise servers every time there's a network connection. So while the USB port location is going to be something of a problem for some of the traditional local backups, I think we're seeing more and more companies and individuals getting away from those entirely. And frankly, I think that's a good thing.
Now, I want to talk more about disasters. We'll get right back to it to talk about things like the rugged portable, which we shot up, and the various IoSafe products that we've burned, electrocuted, crushed, dropped, and otherwise flooded. But first, I want to take a moment to talk about one of our sponsors, and that is Citrix and GoToMeeting. Now, GoToMeeting with HD Faces is, well, it's something that increases the efficiency of what you already have in place. Now, we all know that in order to be successful in business, you need to meet with people. You need to meet with your colleagues. You need to meet with your teammates. You need to meet with your clients. Successful teamwork is what makes for successful business, after all. So when you meet, you want to meet face-to-face so you can get all the nonverbal communication. You want to see where they're looking. You want to see if they're smiling or frowning. You want to look for that little eye raise that might give you a hint as to what they're thinking. But with clients and coworkers spread out across the globe and always on the go, coming together in this day and age is sometimes impossible. That's why I use GoToMeeting with HD Faces, the powerful and simple way to meet and collaborate online. From wherever you are, whenever you need, bam, you can connect. With GoToMeeting, it just takes a click to share your screen and work on documents in real time. And with a webcam, you can see everyone in HD video. That's that face-to-face connection that gives you more than just what you're hearing, more than just what they're saying. It's so easy to launch or join a meeting from anywhere using your computer, iPhone, or tablet. Now, with GoToMeeting, you can even present from your iPad. I like having Citrix as a sponsor of TWiET because I use GoToMeeting on an almost daily basis. My work takes me to the four corners of the globe on pretty much a monthly basis just to keep me in touch with my colleagues. Now, that's days, weeks, and months on the road, all while losing my sanity, my health, and the ability to connect with the people back at my office in Washington, D.C. GoToMeeting not only allowed me to keep in touch with my colleagues in the field without having to fly to their location, but I would argue that our communication is now better than it was before because we can meet as often as we need to get the work done. I love GoToMeeting. It's so easy to use, and with HD Faces, it really is like meeting in person. Now, here's what I want you to do. I want you to have the same experience of GoToMeeting that I had. I want you to try it free for 30 days. Don't wait. For this special offer, visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code ENTERPRISE. Be sure to use the promo code ENTERPRISE. GoToMeeting, meeting is believing, and we thank Citrix for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Now let's get to the main event, the reason why we're all gathered here, and that is enterprise destruction. That's right. We're going to be talking about how we should be structuring our networks, how we should be thinking about our data in order to make it survive the next disaster. Rob, because you're the CEO of IOSafe and because you are the acknowledged master of the disaster demo, I want to start with you. I have seen you put some of your gear through absolute nightmare scenarios in the last couple of years. I think the last, you know, 4 years or so, 5 years, you've been the absolute best demo at CES because you've actually shown people what your gear can survive. We've seen it get shot. We've seen it get dropped from a, you know, a great height. We've seen it get crushed by a tractor. We've seen it get burned and thrown in a pool and, well, shot at and electrified. Tell me, when you are creating a new IOSafe product, what is your guiding philosophy for what people want and how you're going to protect their data?
Yeah, well, we just look at the data universe at large and realize that most of data sits vulnerable. Most of the data doesn't sit in the cloud. And the purpose with IOSafe is to really just protect data wherever it sits vulnerable. And so our products are really meant to be just really easy ways to add a layer of protection that might just be impractical otherwise. I think there's a lot of different ways to protect your data, and I think that IOSafe's mission is to just mitigate all that data loss that's happening in the world as much as we can with our unique products.
Right. Now, tell me a little bit about what I'm looking at here. So if Jason will switch over to the product cam, I've got a couple of examples of IOSafe technology. This one is actually one of my favorite because I carry it with me all the time. This is the IOSafe Rugged Portable. Inside here, we've got a hard drive that's surrounded by a silicone shock-resistant bumper, a very hard case that we've actually shot at, burned, and electrified. And it works well for people who want a more rugged storage device on the go. We've also got something like this, which is the IOSafe Solo G3. This is more like the original product that IOSafe introduced. It's a hard shell storage device that puts a hard drive in the middle of that ceramic, that special ceramic I talked about earlier. A really nice case and pretty much a bulletproof design. And then we move over to the device we just talked about, the IOSafe N2. Going through this, it seems like every year you're adding another angle, another avenue for people to use IOSafe products, first on the desktop, then mobile, now in the data center. What's next?
Well, it's always fun to think about what's next. I think as IOSafe progresses, I think moving up the food chain is a natural progression for IOSafe. The SMB, enterprise, remote office, backup, and disaster protection is a real sweet spot for IOSafe. Applications around not only protecting the server OS, but video surveillance and healthcare compliance type applications are something that we'll be pushing harder into the future.
Alan, I want to throw it to you for a second because Titus in the chat room says, will my data be safe if I put the NAS in Jell-O, freeze it with liquid nitrogen, and shoot it into low Earth orbit to a flaming reentry? Now, of course, that's a joke, but you've had time with a lot of different IOSafe products. What kind of protection does it offer? I mean, hopefully Jason will run the B-roll behind it. What kind of protection does it offer, and how does it really compare to other, quote-unquote, disaster-resistant or disaster-proof storage devices?
Well, as far as actual disaster-resistant items, I mean, the IOSafe products are really the only ones. They sort of have the corner on the market. I haven't really seen anything else that's even remotely as popular out there. I mean, really, Rob, do you guys have any competition even that you know of?
Yeah, we've had competition kind of come and go over the years, but I think that it would be very hard for a competitor to do exactly what IOSafe does at price points that IOSafe does it at. I mean, the technology is starting to get more and more mature, and it's certainly an advantage for IOSafe.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Padre, there's just nothing else out there that really holds a candle to this sort of thing. Everything else is just a hard drive it might as well just be out in the open. You know, you just have some thin enclosure around it. There's just airspace in there. So the hard drive is really exposed to whatever the elements may be. So if you can't keep it in a nice, cool, you know, relatively low humidity environment, it's just exposed to the elements, right? These are the only products that are meant to be able to to really hit these things with the elements. And it's I believe the rating is like 1550 degrees Fahrenheit for 30 minutes, right, which I don't even think typical house fires even get that high, or even small building, small business type fires would get that hot for that long.
Well, it would get that high if your business was to store jet fuel. Cheebert, let me throw this over to you. So, you know, we're seeing a lot of the destruction on the video feed. I'm sorry for the audio listeners, but download the video later on. In the video feed right now, you're seeing some of the things that Rob Moore himself, in his demonstrations at CES, has done to his products over the year. Can you imagine any other products that could survive even half of these tests?
I've actually seen some. Oh, geez, I'm not even supposed to talk about them. There are some solutions in the military, but for the price, there's nothing, absolutely nothing I've ever seen that's even close to what Rob and the IOSafe people have done. Hey, Rob, here's your next test, dude. Here, how about that? How about a Nike missile?
We've thought about doing a Vegas demo like that, and just nobody has any
missiles.
Well, they just don't think it's very funny, you know. They just they don't want a big missile smoking hole in the middle of the strip. But
really? Oh, bummer.
Well, that's
they
sort
don't
of
see the humor.
That's been an issue every year. You know, every once in a while, I'll get an email from some of your PR people. By the way, they're incredible. They're very, very nice, very, very knowledgeable about the product that they're repping. But they want to know what people want to see done next to the drive. And we've run out of suggestions. You've pretty much done all the worst things.
Well, I think in the early years of IOSafe, it was really important for us to get out there and just show exactly, you know, what's different about our stuff, and if we could do it in an entertaining way and have a few laughs, then I think that was great. I think now it's time for IOSafe to probably get a bit more serious and get more centered around business continuity, disaster recovery. You know, where do we really play? And I mean, that's where we're headed off into the future.
Right. Curtis, when we're talking about enterprise and disaster recovery, what kind of plans would a typical enterprise, well-prepared enterprise, have for contingencies like a fire or an earthquake or losing an entire branch, losing maybe even the corporate office? What things have to be in place in order to continue doing business?
Enterprise is just how long they can withstand being out of business or to be away from their applications and data. Once they decide that, then they can put together a plan that meets the needs of that gap. Now, I have seen companies do everything from saying, we can stand to be down for a few hours. These are companies that tend to have their major data backed up onto, for example, a tape. Those tapes are then moved to an offsite location every night. I've seen companies that said, we can afford no more than a 1 second gap. These are companies that replicate their entire data center in a separate geographically distant location where things can do an automatic switchover. The key is to go through the planning stage. Know how long you can afford to be away from your customers, away from your data, away from your applications, then build a scenario that makes that possible. Now, one of the interesting things is that through the diverse, geographically distributed workforce that so many companies have embraced, and Yahoo has notably gone away from this last week, we see the ability to perhaps take some information, keep locally with the employees on something like an IOSafe device, and continue to have them function even if the data center is offline. That plays with your disaster recovery. That plays with the gap that can occur. It complicates things in some ways, but it also makes your entire enterprise work on the model of the internet, and that is distributing everything so that in the worst case, you can reroute your queries, your data, your applications to the working nodes rather than just back to that one central location that's now offline.
Rob, what are the most common scenarios that you see when you're dealing with a catastrophic data loss? What are the biggest mistakes that people make when, as Curtis is speaking about, when they plan their scenarios but maybe underplan or plan for the wrong thing?
Sure. You know, the biggest thing that we fight with is just people put their data in one spot and they confuse the word backup. They think backup means move my data to a target, whether it's an IOSafe drive or some other single drive or even to the cloud. If your data exists in only one spot, you're not backed up and you're not redundant. And we deal with people every single day that come in tears. Oh my God, I deleted my data or I formatted my drive and that was my backup. And we have to educate them that it's not really redundant and you should keep three copies of your data in two different spots, at least on an IOSafe drive or offsite. So,
I have something to add to that one.
Go, Alan.
This is the sheet of paper that comes with the IOSafe.
Yes.
It says RAID is not backup.
Yeah.
Very clearly.
Yeah, and that's a big thing that we're going to struggle with the end too. People are going to buy this device and go, "Oh, I'm backed up and it's dual drives." And well, what if you accidentally delete everything? What if you have you just hit the wrong key and it's you still need a backup and so that's the biggest part. Fires and floods and natural disasters, these happen. But by far the biggest challenge is just getting people to know what redundancy is, know the difference between move and copy. And this is our biggest challenge.
You know, it's interesting because when we talk about disaster recovery or data integrity, often we our mind wanders to the fire or to the flood, the explosion, the missile launch, whatever it's going to be. But I'd say in my 20 years in the IT field, the number one killer of data has got to be user error. Someone accidentally deletes a volume that they didn't want to delete, or they copy data over that is older than the data that was there. Which is why I love the fact that IOSafe has this thing. Rob, do you want to explain what this little thing is on every IOSafe product?
Yeah, it's a little warning sticker that says you need to register for our data recovery service. And what our data recovery service is, and all IOSafe products come with 1 year free of data recovery. What the data recovery service is it's a bit like insurance for your data. So if you accidentally delete your data or you do something silly or you have fire or you have flood or I joke, you know, you have a big jelly donut accident, we will help you get your data back. We'll talk you through it. If we can do it on site without having to ship drives back to us, we'll do it. We'll pay for the shipping back to us if we need to. We will work on the device to either undelete the volume or recover the data. If we can't get the data back at IOSafe, we've partnered with DriveSavers, our forensic recovery partner, and they'll take the platters out of the drive and try to get data bits one at a time. And we pay for all that. That's all included. And we do our best to get the data back no matter what. We'll even go after the server that's attached to the IOSafe drive if we need to get to that data. And that's something that it's a part of the data recovery service.
Curtis, the rule of 3-2-1. Let me go to you, Chibert. Chibert, the rule of 3-2-1 has been around for a long, long time. You know, you need three copies, two different spots, and at least one other type of media. So you can't keep everything in the same type of media. And yet, people still don't do that. And it's sort of unexcusable in the enterprise where there is the money to do it and there's supposed to be the resources to do it. Why do you think it is such a horrible pain for people to do proper backup?
You know, I don't know. I guess you just really need to get burned first. You know, a child doesn't learn about a stove being hot until they actually manage to burn themselves. I think it's the same thing with IT professionals. until you've actually had to do a restore and you've had bad tapes or whatever. Or my favorite, people keep thinking CDs and DVDs are forever. They are not. The only optical media currently on the market today that is considered even close to archival is Blu-ray, because the recording layer is not exposed to the world. And I also love how people keep writing on DVDs with Sharpies and expect the acid in the ink not to burn through the recording layer. So people, you know, stop and think. You know, if you want something to stick around forever, use something that's actually archival. Take a look at the average lifespan of the media. In Hawaii, we have so much humidity that if you don't store tapes in a environmentally conditioned vault, the average lifespan of magnetic tape in Hawaii is under 2 years. So stop and think.
Curtis, I think that could be the name of a book, Stop and Think. looking at it from your enterprise experience, dealing with all different types of execs and IT managers across the enterprise, what do you think is the reluctance to do proper backup?
I think it comes down, in everyone's case, to a question of cost. Now, for some people, the cost is going to be money. For some, it's going to be effort. For others, it's going to be time. For still others, it's the simple PETA factor. But one way or the other, they've done some sort of internal calculus and weighed the cost of doing regular backups, doing the security they know they need to do, versus the anticipated cost of a failure. And they have decided that the possibility of failure is so remote that the cost of that side is not outweighed by the cost of doing it right. And that's an absolutely valid calculation right up until the moment that something goes wrong, in which case it is wildly out of whack. So to me, it's bad math one way or another. And as Brian says, so many companies, so many individuals, they keep not doing it until that one tragic incident occurs that changes the math for them from then on.
Rob, I want to give you the last word here, and I want to give you a scenario. What would you say would be the best practices for a typical enterprise user? So I'm an exec. I'm on the road with my laptop. I've got crucial data that travels with me. I have a data center with an IT division that monitors it. I've got offsite backup. What are the things that you think I need to do to avoid the kind of disasters that you've seen with IOSafe customers?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it really comes down to the amount of data you're trying to protect. I mean, if you're trying to protect 20, 10, 20, 30 gigabytes, it's not hard to do that over a pure cloud solution. I think when it starts to be 50, 100, 500 gigabytes, a terabyte or two, I think it starts to really break down. I think you have no choice but to use local data storage. And with the N2 in particular, what I've been using personally, I sort of at IOSafe, we eat our own dog food. What I've been doing is keeping my terabytes of data on the N2, accessing that remotely, you know, through any device, sort of like my private personal cloud. And then using a rugged portable to do a system backup and OS backup of my laptop as well. Then just syncing to the N2 whenever I can, or syncing with my email, using a cloud-based email is also my personal choice.
So again, it's to spread the risk. Spread the risk, yeah, over different devices, spread the risk over different locations.
Yeah, exactly. It's don't put all your eggs in one basket. It's multiple copies, multiple locations. Just keep driving towards that.
I know it's going to sound redundant, but I think this is one of those things where I have no problem with being redundant because it is such an important point. Alan, over to you. You're a storage expert, and you know how these devices work. You know how often hard drives fail. You know how often data gets deleted. Would you agree with most of Rob's points of having multiple devices, having ruggedized devices, storing your data in different spots and different locations and in different formats?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's really the best way to go. The only real trick to that is just trying to keep a handle on managing it all and what is where, which is actually where some of the good parts of the Synology technology that's built into the N2 does, because it has ability to do a backup regime, like in the background, where it's synchronizing files to a different device. Could be elsewhere, could be across the internet somewhere else. So that's actually pretty good.
Cheebert, anything you want to add to your personal backup regimen? I mean, we've already talked about the obvious things. Is there any secret sauce that you use in dealing with data at the Advanced Network Computing Laboratory?
Actually, the better example is the Aloha Cabled Observatory. Our hydrophone data, we chew up something on the order of a terabyte per month just in hydrophone data. So one of the tricks that we did is we actually partnered with Primera Corporation, and that's a Blu-ray robot. So we'll actually burn onto Blu-ray from our NAS, and we'll burn two copies and then print on the top of the Blu-ray the metadata and dates and so forth so that we can actually find it. One of the copies goes to a salt mine in Utah, and the other one becomes the one we stick on a shelf here in Honolulu.
And Curtis, if there were to be one message that you could give to, we'll get back to Curtis as soon as Skype stops messing with us. I do want to take a moment to pause one more time for our very last sponsor of the show, and that's Lantronics. Now, iOS devices are incredibly popular, and for good reason. They're fantastic. They're easy to use, and they're well-designed. Be it an iPad or an iPad mini, an iPhone or an iPod. But one of the things that we've noticed is how difficult it is to print. Now, you could have one of those specially designed printers that has the protocol built in to interface with Apple devices, but there aren't a lot of those on the market, especially not in the enterprise. The other way that you could do it is to, say, shuffle around files, send yourself an email with the picture that you want to print or the email that needs to be turned into hard copy. But we know that that's, at best, a kludge. Now, you could do all those things, or you could take a look at the XPrint server from Lantronics. Now, I have seen these workarounds, but there is nothing that's quite like the XPrint server from Lantronics. The XPrint server enables wireless printing from your iPad, iPhone, or iPod Touch. It eliminates the need to print through apps, install software, or email yourself documents for printing. And it works with the USB or network printer that you already own, whether it's wired or wireless. The XPrint server prints directly from iOS, and it supports more than 4,000 of the most popular printers on the market, including multifunction printers. Now, what I like about the XPrint server is that setup is really, really easy. It automatically discovers the available printers and makes them usable by your iOS devices. And for the more advanced users, it also includes a configuration menu so that you can customize the way that your XPrint server works on your network. That's one of the features that was asked for by our enterprise users. A single XPrint server supports multiple printers and virtually unlimited iOS devices. The Home Edition is $99 and supports up to 8 USB and 2 network printers, while the Office Edition is $199 and supports an unlimited number of network printers and includes features like Active Directory support. Now, here's what I want you to do. I want you to visit xprintserver.com/twit for more information and to buy. And we've got a special offer. Use the coupon code TWIT to receive free shipping on your offer. Remember, visit xprintserver.com/twit, and at checkout, enter the coupon code TWIT. And we thank Lantronics for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, you've gone and done it. You've used up another perfectly good Monday afternoon listening to TWIT. I want to thank our panelists for being on the show, all of our panelists. Let's start with you, Cheebert. What are the things that the TWIT audience needs to know about the Geek in Paradise?
Well, the Geek in Paradise loves geeking out. And one of the things that I'm geeking out on is, here we go, that is a GPS synchronized clock that I got all the parts from the folks at Adafruit. Thank you, Lady Ada. But I bring this up because Honolulu is starting the planning process to do a mini maker fair. And who knows, maybe if it grows big enough, our friends at Make Magazine will sponsor us and it becomes a regular maker fair. But it's just in the early planning stages and we're just trying to find out where we can actually have our maker fair.
Three words, Twyatt in Honolulu.
There you go.
What about you, Curtis? What's going on at Enterprise Efficiency?
Well, we have a good radio show tomorrow on a different aspect of storage. We're going to be looking at SSDs, and we're going to be busting some myths about solid-state storage. That happens tomorrow at 2 o'clock Eastern. We'd love to have folks join us for that. And also let people know that in a couple of weeks, I'm going to be out and about at the Enterprise Connect show in Orlando, Florida. If any of the Twyatt audience is going to be there, we'd love to meet up with you. And as always, if you are a CIO or senior IT executive who would like to talk to me about what you're doing, would love to get in touch, please feel free to get in touch with me via the Twitter handle down below or franklin@enterpriseefficiency.com.
Absolutely. And I will also be at Enterprise Connect, so maybe we can have a Twyatt from Orlando. On to you, Alan. What's going on with PC Perspective? And especially tell us where we can find that review of the N2.
Well, the N2 review is actually, it's right on the front page right now. It's pcper.com. The biggest, it's not necessarily enterprise related, but it's actually the one of the coolest things I've seen us do in a while is Ryan's doing this thing called frame rating. Have you heard of that?
I believe so, yes.
It's okay, so the gist of it is usually you benchmark graphics cards by measuring the frame rate that the system reports back to you. Well, it turns out that the software at play, the drivers, whatnot, that are driving the video card, is reporting one number, but that number is not necessarily the same thing that your eye actually sees. So what he's doing is he's capturing full frame video right out of the video card, and then we're passing it through a bunch of mumbo jumbo that's giving us, okay, what is the actual frame rate that's taking place? And we're finding that it's vastly different than the numbers that were typically reported in anything that you might have read anywhere prior to us doing this.
Nice.
Yep.
And Rob, thank you again for coming on. I know you're really, really busy, so I do appreciate you coming on to the show and sharing some of the love about IOSafe. What's going on with IOSafe? Are there any new things that we should know about, or just where can we find out more about all the products that you offer?
Yeah, of course, at iosafe.com, all the information's there. New stuff. We're just having a lot of fun with the N2 and private personal cloud type storage. I think that it's great stuff for IOSafe in the future, and we'll continue on that path.
Thank you again to all of our panelists and to all the people who make this show possible, especially to our super producer, super TD, Jason Howell, who had to work overtime for this episode, my mega producer, Karsten, and, you, for coming to watch. Now, did you know that we do this show every week live? That's right, Monday noon Pacific time. We're here in the Brick House bringing all the enterprise goodness to you. Why not join us live? If you join us live, you can also jump into the chat room, which is a grand experiment in temporary community. You can meet some wonderful people, some great engineers, some bright technologists, and, yes, some of the funniest trolls you'll find on this side of the afterlife. Also, you can subscribe to our feed so you get Twyatt downloaded into whatever device it is that you use. You want it on your iPad? Sure. You want it on your iPhone? Of course. You want it on your Android device, your Zune? Yeah, go to twit.tv/Twyatt and you'll be able to drop down all the different ways you can have all this goodness delivered to your hotness each and every single week automatically. Now, you can get an audio version for the drive to work. You can get a video version for home, or you could just watch it right from the site and get the high-definition Twyatt straight into your head. Also, why not follow us on our brand spanking new YouTube page? That's right, we're dividing the Twitch shows out into their individual YouTube channels so that people can watch just the geeky goodness that they want. You can find us at youtube.com/Twyatt. Also, make sure you subscribe because we will be having our very first Google Hangout next week, and that's where we're going to make the announcement. Also, follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/PadreSJ. you'll be able to find out what we're doing in every episode of TWiET before it actually happens. You'll be able to suggest topics for upcoming episodes, or you'll just be able to find out what the Digital Jesuit does in between his TWiET outings. And thank you again to CyberDog in the chat room for providing all of our show notes. And Chibert, again, is volunteering MakerFair.com. I just got that note in my my window, and I want to make sure that that comes up. I'm Father Robert Ballester. I want to thank you for listening. And remember, if you want to know what's going on in the Enterprise, just keep TWiET.